In Genesis chapter 26. Genesis 26. When I was studying the other day, I wrote down Genesis 26, and then I put Isaac's axe, like the Acts of the Apostles. There's several things that go on in chapter 26 that we're going to bring some attention to. Obviously, this is not the only thing that Isaac does, but these are kind of a summary of the events that take hold in Isaac's life beyond his marriage and beyond his direct dealings with his two sons and their blessings and lack of blessings and the things that we studied Sunday. A lot of focus is put on Abraham in Genesis, and a lot of focus is put on Jacob. And there's a lot less about Isaac than the other two. But however, it doesn't matter whether there's a tremendous amount of text on somebody. It's the lessons that we're supposed to learn from them and their interaction with God. In 26 and verse 1, it says, "There was a famine in the land besides the first famine that was in the days of Abraham. And Isaac went to Abimelech, king of the Philistines, in Gerar," or Gerar. In Genesis chapter 20 and verse 1, not just verse 1, but in chapter 20, we studied about Abraham also going down to the Philistines and encountering a man named Abimelech, the same people in the same place, and his interaction with them. And I put forward the statement about an answer I didn't know, and I still haven't found that an absolute answer on it, whether this Abimelech is the same Abimelech that we're encountering now. You remember when we studied it in Genesis 20, though, we were talking about the age of the... You're shaking your head, yes. Right, that's what most everybody I read was, yeah. So, and what he was jumping to was what I found the most of was Abimelech was the name of like Caesar or like the Pharaoh, the name Pharaoh. And so you have generational things happening here. But it's represented, it sounds like we're talking about the same guy. And if you remember in chapter 20, I said, if he fell for this twice, then, you know, there was some major issues because the father and the son bring the same issue and the same guy falls for it. However, as a nation, they didn't learn too much either. But we're going to see a couple of statements that both of these Abimelechs make about the situation when they discover their issue there. So in Genesis 20, we saw Abraham go in chapter 12, we saw Abraham go to Egypt, and then in chapter 20, we see him go to the Philistines, and in both places, the same situation happens. besides the first famine that was in the days of Abraham, the writer here, Moses, is making a differentiation between the timeline so that we don't try and put these stories together, Abraham and Isaac happening to be in the same place with the same famine for the same reason. These were two totally separate stories, and it's important because Isaac is a grown man with his own family, his own decisions to make, his own faith to build, and he is independent from Abraham and his decisions, and so the story unfolds that way so that we get that building of his relationship with God on his own. In verse 2, "Then the Lord appeared to him and said, 'Do not go down to Egypt. Live in the land of which I will tell you.'" So where was Isaac before he went to Gerar? Do y'all remember where we left him at? It's back in chapter 25 and verse 11, and it says, "And it came to pass after the death of Abraham that God blessed his son Isaac, and Isaac dwelt in Beer Lahai Roi." Do you remember what Beer Lahai Roi was? Where that name came from? Hagar. That's right. So Isaac dwelt there for some time, And now he's gone down because of famine to the land of the Philistines. Beer Lahai Roy was way up in the north of Canaan, and this is way down in the south on the way to Egypt. So on the way to Egypt, God appears to him. Now, it doesn't say he's headed there, but he stops him and says, don't go there. In verse 2, he says, the Lord appeared and said, do not go down to Egypt. Live in the land which I will tell you. Verse 3, dwell in this land, and I will be with you and bless you. And to you and your descendants I will give these lands, and I will perform the oaths which I swore to Abraham, your father. And I will make your descendants multiply as the stars of heaven. I will give your descendants all these lands, and your seed, all the nations of the earth, shall be blessed. Because Abraham obeyed my voice and kept my charge, my commandments, my statutes, and my laws. So Isaac dwelt in Gerar. What scriptures have we been studying that are reminiscent of these promises here to Abraham? There are several different promises reiterated, or not reiterated, relayed, I guess you might say, or restated now, given to Isaac, the second generation from Abraham. Each of these things was spoken about, not necessarily all in one place, but in two or three places to Abraham, and is now being promised to Isaac. But it comes with some strings attached. What was the string attached here? What did he ask Isaac to do? No, look in verse 3. He says, dwell in the land, and I will be with you. So he says, stay here. Don't go to Egypt. Don't do any of these things. Why would he put that prerequisite or whatever on these blessings?
Is this the land God promised?
Pretty simply, yeah. It's the land God promised to Abraham and said, look around you. You remember, when I think it was in chapter 13. I believe it was chapter 13. Chapter 13, verse 14. The Lord said to Abraham, after Lot had separated from him, lift your eyes now and look to the place where you are, northward, southward, eastward, and westward, for all the land which you see I will give to your descendants, and I will make your descendants as the dust of the earth, so that no man could number them. So he had given him this land, made that promise, this land promise, a very physical promise, and he says, dwell in this land. And so he's attaching his people there, and that's where he wants them to be. He had told Abraham that at some point they would be detached from the land and in Egypt for to the fourth generation, I think is the way it put it, for 400 years they would be there. And then they would come back and take the land. Do you remember why he said they would be that 400 years? We're going to study a little bit tonight. Why was the reason given to Abraham that there was going to be a big delay? Why didn't Abraham get to just have the place then, right then? Okay, not just Egypt, but specifically, he said that the sin of the Amorites was not fulfilled yet. You remember that? Look in chapter 15. We're going to piece some of this together here in a minute. In chapter 15, verse 16, but in the fourth generation they shall return here, for the iniquity of the Amorites is not yet complete. And so, then if you continue in verse 17, it came to pass when the sun went down and it was dark that behold, there appeared a smoking oven and a burning torch that passed between those places. On the same day, the Lord made a covenant with Abraham saying, to your descendants, I have given this land from the river of Egypt to the great river, the river Euphrates, the Canaanites, the Kenizzites, the Kadmonites, the Hittites, Perizzites, the Rephaim, the Amorites, the Canaanites, the Girgashites, and the Jebusites. So all these people, all of all that land were being given to him. It wasn't just the Amorites, but the specific was the Amorites' sin is not complete yet. And then he goes on to list all the other people that were going to be displaced because of them. So you can kind of infer that it was for the same reason that they weren't being displaced now, but they would be later, is because they were collectively all in the same boat. One thing we'll see in this story, like we saw in Abraham's story, where he went to a foreign nation, he represented his wife as his sister, and when questioned about it, he said, well, I didn't know God was in this place. You remember that? And so then they were like, well, of course God's here, and you could have brought sin on us. They understood who God was, and they understood what God's requirement law was for them concerning those kinds of relations and illicit relationships. We still see that here in Genesis 26 as we read through the story of Abimelech and his reaction to Isaac's deceit. We see that same reaction here in a few minutes in verse 9 and 10. What is this that you have done to us? Verse 10, one of the people might soon have lain with your wife and would have brought guilt on us. And so they recognized that there was guilt associated with some illicit act that was contrary to nature, contrary to God's law. And even further into chapter 26, we'll see that they recognized the Lord God, because he says in verse 28, we have certainly seen that the Lord is with you. And so at this time, these people were still had some relationship with God, and they understood who God was, and they had... God was giving them time, was being long-suffering, and there was righteous among them to some degree. And so the promise was being made and was being reiterated here in these first few verses to Isaac, that this land will be yours. And God, seeing into the future, knew that he was going to use Isaac's seed and Abraham's seed to judge these people when they became completely idolaters, completely sinners, and had completely left his law. And so Isaac dwelt there. What does it tell us in that little simple statement in verse 6? So Isaac dwelt in Gerar. Did he believe what he just heard from God? Just like his father did. And it was just like Abraham, when he heard the words of God, he believed it and it was accounted to him for righteousness. You could add that right to the end of this. Isaac dwelt in Gerar. Why did he dwell in Gerar and didn't go to Egypt? There was a famine in the land. The natural thing for him was to go to Egypt. God intervened, says, don't go to Egypt. Stay here in the land. What was it God was telling him? Stay here in spite of the famine. What can we take from that? Physically, to Isaac and Rebecca and their family and their flocks and all their people and their servants and everybody else, he's got this horde of people he's got to take care of, and all of his animals and his livestock. And he says, don't go to somewhere where you think you can be taken care of and live in their shelter. Stay here. But there's famine in the land. And he tells him, you'll prosper. But he's telling him, trust in me, right? In spite of what you see and what you don't understand and you think is the right thing to do, this is where I want you to be, and this is how we're going to fulfill this promise. So put your absolute trust in me. And so then in verse 6, we see the statement, he stayed in Gerar. So he gave God his absolute trust and put his faith in God there. When we see that trust there, it's not just, okay, well, you know, I'm going to trust. This is absolute trust because, like I said, he has all these people, all these animals. He had to rely completely on God at this point and have faith that God was going to provide for him. Now, Isaac had seen the things and the works that he had done with Abraham. We've talked about the relationship that Isaac must have had with Abraham and made some assumptions about maybe even their conversations when Abraham went to offer Isaac as a teenage boy on an altar. Isaac had to have had a measure of faith himself already, and this was one big challenge. Abraham was asked to leave his homeland and travel away from his family and away from wherever and go where God told him. A very similar thing here is said. He said in verse 2, the very last part of verse 2, do not go down to Egypt and live in the land of which, I'm sorry, do not go down to Egypt, live in the land of which I shall tell you. So it's kind of a similar statement to what he told Abraham. Go where I tell you, and it'll work out. Abraham got up and went where he was told. And so then he says, stay here in this land, and I will multiply you, make descendants, your seed, everybody will be blessed because of your seed. Now, there's three different promises basically made. There's the physical one of the land here, and then you have the one with the descendants multiplying and the people, the great nation, and then you have this blessing in him, his seed, all the nations of the earth will be blessed, which we know is an eternal one. And so did any of these physically come true in Isaac's time, in his life? Or his son's lives, or any of those lives? Not really. As far as the promise of him being taken care of physically and abounding, that we'll see that even in this chapter comes to fruition for him, and God definitely is taking care of him. But he is a small fledgling family in the big picture of the world as he sees it. In verse 7, is there anything y'all want to add to what I just talked about there before we move to verse 7? Because we're going to shift gears a little bit. In verse 7, and the men of the place asked about his wife, and he said, "She is my sister." All right. When Abraham said it was it his sister, his wife? Abraham's wife, Sarah, was his half-sister, right? What relationship was Isaac to Rebekah? Once removed is, I think, how you would say it. They weren't first cousins like his brother's or his father's, whatever. This was his father's brothers by marriage. Anyway, it was a cousin by marriage. Second cousin. I think we would call it a second cousin. Anyway, I don't know. It was pretty removed. It wasn't his sister in any shape, form, or fashion. So even in Kentucky, it would be illegal for them to be married.
Or in Texas.
That's right. For the record, in Texas, you can marry your first cousin. In Kentucky, you have to be second cousins. So Texas is farther back than Kentucky, just for the record. And I didn't know that. Morgan looked it up, and there's like 12 states you can marry your first cousin in, which I didn't know. Anyway, so he's not married to his sister, but he represents her as that, and Rebecca keeps her mouth shut. But what happens? How do they get found out? Verse 8, Abimelech, king of the Philistines, looked through the window and saw, and there was Isaac showing endearment to Rebekah, his wife. I have a little side note that says he was caressing her. So there was some form of physical PDA going on. To what extent, we don't know, but it was really obvious to the king of the Philistines that this was not just some pass-by brush of the hand. And so he calls him to him. In verse 9, says, Abimelech called Isaac, said, "Quite obviously she is your wife. So how could you say she is my sister?" Isaac said, "Because I said, lest I die on the account of her." Notice the difference in response between this and Abraham. He didn't say, "Because I didn't know God was here." I don't know if that was left out, or if there was a longer conversation, or if this is, you know, a shortened version of what was talked about. But he was definitely feared for his life, for the same reason that Abraham said he feared for his life, was because his wife was beautiful. And so Abimelech in verse 10 says, "What is this you have done? One of the people might have lain with her, and you brought guilt on us." So Abimelech, verse 11, charged all of his people, saying, "He who touches this man or his wife shall surely be put to death." It's amazing how God turns a bad situation into a good one, because this brings me to the greater thought of the protection God gave Abraham and Isaac. And we talked about this some with Abraham in the same situation. Abraham left Egypt with more than he came with because of his own problem and issue. And then again with Abimelech before. Yes, ma'am.
Stay away from God, had to come in there to
Right. That's probably part of it. The next thing that it talks about here in verse 12, it says, so Isaac sowed in that land. Now he says, he makes this decree, and then it says Isaac sowed in this land. So he was allowed to stay there. So he was just put hands off. You remember some time ago I mentioned that Israel ended up going to Egypt, and it was almost like an incubation period, and the country was able to grow and develop, or their nation as a whole, and the people, the numbers of people increased there. And then they came out as a great nation, very rich as they came out of Egypt. This is kind of part of God's long-term plan, stair-stepping in this growth that you see here, is because now he has a shelter and a place, a safe place. God just told him, stay in Gerar, or stay here, don't go to Egypt. And so now he stays in there. He makes a mistake, definitely, but the end result is he's still there, and God makes a way for him, and he's providing for him. And it says, so Isaac sowed in that land and reaped in the same year 100-fold, and the Lord blessed him, and the man began to prosper and continued prospering until he became very prosperous. For he had possessions of flocks, possessions of herds, a great number of servants, so that the Philistines envied him. Now, before I get to this, so let me read verse 15. Now the Philistines had stopped up the wells which his father's servants had dug in the days of Abraham.
Obviously,
What happens in verse 20? Isaac does all the work. His servants do all the work. They clean out the wells in the land of Gerar in the valley. And then the Philistines come along and say, hey, wait a minute. Those are pretty good wells. We'd like to have them back. And so they get into verse 24 with Isaac. Saying, the water is ours. So he called the name of the well Esek. In verse 21, he went and dug another well. Now this is a fresh well, and they quarreled over that one also, so he called it Sitnah. So this would be number 5. In verse 22, he moved from there and dug another well, and they did not quarrel over it. In other words, he went far enough out and away from them that they finally were tired of taking his wells, and so he found a place that he could rest. And so he called its name Rehoboth, or Rehoboth, because he said, for now the Lord has made room for us. We shall be fruitful in the land. That word Rehoboth there means spaciousness. Everybody. And so there's room for us in the land. Verse 23, he went up from there to Beersheba, and the Lord appeared to him the same night and said, I am the God of your father Abraham. Do not fear, I am with you. I will bless you and multiply your descendants in my servant Abraham's sake. Why does God choose to appear to him and say this simple statement and give him this blessing in the middle? Why do you think this is entered right here? I think it's kind of interesting that it is. We already saw the blessings in the if you stay here, then I'll do these things. What has Isaac done? He stayed, and he's moving around, and he's dealing with all the trials and tribulations of dealing with people and land. He's trying to be settled there, and he's going from place to place, and he's living in tents, and he doesn't have anything to himself, and he's having to live at the mercy, I guess you say, of the other people around there, even though they're all. Every time he moves, God's blessing his word and his association. And so God appears to him and says, you've done what I tell you. It's like a reinforcement statement. I think he says, I'm with you and I bless you and I'll be sent to my servant and my sake. What did Isaac do in reaction to this blessing?
Built an altar there.
Built an altar. The reason that he's digging all these wells? That's why in verse 19, when he hit that, when he dug that well, it said he hit running water. And then the car came real quick and said, oh, that's our well now, you know, because there was running water. So this was to sustain him. He had probably hundreds of people. I mean, if it's any indication from just looking at what you see listed out that Jacob later acquires and what Abraham had before, and Isaac's taken over Abraham's stuff. I mean, this was a huge company of people, and they had to have a consistent ability to have water. that the very next verse in 26, Abimelech came from Gerar with one of his friends, and Phicol, the commander of his army, comes out to visit him. Why does he come out to visit him? Because he's been seeing what's been going on with Isaac. Isaac keeps moving around, and everywhere he digs a hole, he finds water. These guys are moving around digging a hole in the middle of the desert, and they don't find water. And so then, but Isaac doesn't quarrel with them either. He just goes and digs another well and finds more water, and so he keeps going. This is a sign to this nation that he's there in association with, that God's with this person. So now, yeah, they're wanting him to come witch wells for them. So in verse 26, he comes out there. Isaac said to them, "Why have you come to me since you hate me and have sent me away from you?" So he said, "Why in the world would you come out here and bother me? I'm trying to stay away from you and do my thing and you do yours." And he says, "Because certainly we have seen the Lord is with you." In other words, there's no doubt in our minds that God Almighty is with you and he's blessing you in what you do. And so now we're afraid of you, not because you're large in size, but because of your God. It's interesting, a couple verses, we don't have a lot of time, but look with me over in Joshua real quick. A couple of things I want to point out about the reaction of the people later on. Remember the Amalekites were kind of the top name, top shelf name that Moses mentions in writing, that their sin wasn't complete yet. Do you remember who the first people that react to the crossing of the Jordan? Let me see here. In where is that at? In Joshua 12. Well, no, I thought I had it wrote down here. I'm sorry. That's the other one. Joshua chapter 5. I know where it's at. Joshua chapter 5 in verse 1 says, "So it was when the kings of the Amorites who were on the west side of the Jordan and all the kings of the Canaanites who were by the sea heard that the Lord had dried up the waters of the Jordan from before the children of Israel until we had crossed over, and their hearts melted, and there was no spirit in them any longer because of the children of Israel." Was it really because of the children of Israel that their hearts melted? It was because of the God who backed the children of Israel. Yeah, and so you see the same reaction here. You see this king who felt big enough to run him off come back with a little humility and say, "Well, now wait a minute. We ran you off and you left, and we stuck up for ourselves, but then everything you do, you're blessed." And so they saw more than just the water and the wells. They saw a God behind them. And so the Jehovah God was making himself known at this early stage to all of these peoples who he would judge later. Several hundred years later, he would bring judgment on them all. And so he was working these works before them with his people while he's making promises to the righteous and the faithful and saying, "This is going to be your land." Then he was blessing them, and those blessings stood as a testament to these peoples who lived in the land that there was a God in heaven and that he was in control and that he had chosen his people and that they were to take lesson from it. And so some of them did. And so they came to make a treaty with him. Now, a physical treaty over "you don't fight with me and I won't fight with you" doesn't mean that they were penitent in heart for any sin that they had committed and that they were going to serve God with a whole heart. You don't see that in this thing. But it says that you're blessed of the Lord in verse 29. He recognizes this. So in their typical cultural fashion, verse 30, he makes them a feast. They ate and they drank. The next morning they arose. They swore an oath to one another that they would get along. And Isaac sends them away, and he departs from him in peace. And it came to pass the same day. What happened to him the same day? More water. Another blessing. God takes care of him. So God, his Isaac's servants are out there digging this well that they started to dig up there right before Abimelech shows up. And right when Abimelech leaves, they come and they say, "Hey, boss, we found more water." And so We have found water. And in verse 33, he calls it Sheba. Therefore, the name of this city is Beersheba to this day. that Sheba there is translated two different things, and I'm not sure which is more accurate. One is well of the oath, and the other is the well of the seven. And there are seven wells represented in this story, so you could lean each way on that. Then we have those two verses that we talked about last week in the midst of our other conversation about Esau's life issues. And when he was 40, he marries this Hittite, a couple of women of Hittites, and they were grief to Isaac and Rebekah. And it's thrown there at the end. Is there any thoughts or comments before we close? Anything I missed? If not, then it'll be Grant's problem to clean my mess up come Sunday. Thank y'all.